Reports. Yes, is that where we are? The Public Hospital District, our superintendent retiring, Pam Hutchins, gives her last Public Hospital District report.
Okay, we are doing the month of February, and revenue for February was about $8,667. Cumulative for the 2 months, we only had 2 months, it's $12,225. And it's just half of our 0.5% of revised budget projections. And we're 17% into the year. Of course, we only have January and February there. Expenses, we had $26,952 and cumulative up to $29,076. And our cash balance is $675,888 for the end of February. The county, as you remember last month, we voted on the PSAL subsidy to be paid, and that was $516,838. So that will be coming out in March. So our cash balance will be the lowest, and it's customary that time of year for it to be the lowest after we paid that out. And the cash balance for February of 2021 is up 2% from last February of 2020. So we're not seeing a big decrease for right now. Property tax revenues are down 41% from this last time last year, and that is a considerable amount, but because of timing, sometimes when the payments come in and all, it could be just a month glitch. We'll have to pay attention to March and April when we get our biggest tax payment from the county. Will start coming in then. As we talked about earlier, the financial reporting audit for 2019 is almost finished, and they will be having the exit conference, I think, somewhat time around April 14th that all of you will be participating in. And it seemed to be going well, but the final results will be at the exit conference. And I'm scanning over what I already read. We didn't receive any record requests for the month of January or February. We did pay the settlement to Mr. Hood at $15,000, as was approved at the last meeting, and to meet all the legal requirements that we had to meet. We just talked a lot about the grants, so I won't go over that. And the county will be sending out the beginning cash letter for 2020. That's where they reconcile what the actual beginning cash is for 2021. And when that happens, then that's the opportunity to post that actual account of the money they send out, plus make amendments to the budget of any things that housekeeping items and things that you've seen that need to be corrected on the 2021 budget that you, with information that you didn't know when you were doing your budget. So you can do those at the same time after that, in either March, April, May, when you do that. The end of the year for 2020, all those figures are in, and we basically did have a zero balanced budget. We had total revenues ending at $1,393,533, with total expenditures ending up at $1,391,168, which gave us a slightly total income of $2,365. So our budget is pretty balanced. And as in closing, this is my last report, and it's harder than I thought it would be to say goodbye. But I really enjoy the community here on San Juan Island, and all of the public and the first responders, and everybody pulls together to make it the best possible for all of the people. And I have the greatest confidence in Nathan. I will miss Nathan, as I said earlier in our conversations and strategizing and visioning. And I have confidence that he will do a good job and keep, he's done a great job with just a short amount of time of working with the fire department and Chief Collins, and having this drawn out plan that the commissioners have been asking for. And I'm really glad that you have this now to work towards integration. And wherever I am, whether it's on the street or wherever, you feel free to still stop me and tell me what's going on in your life, and I'll be looking to see what's happening in the public hospital district world. And I just wish everybody the best, and I thank each one of you for the way you support the hospital district and the employees that work there, and I thank you for that, and especially all of us. So so next time it'll all be Nathan, and he will do a great job with having all the reports for both the hospital district and EMS together, and it'll take a little time, but as soon as they Steve and the reorganization of who's doing which duties, I'm sure they're gonna do a fantastic job and make a lot of good progress for the district. Thank you.
Thank you, Pam.
Does anyone have any questions on any of the I sent out a lot of reports, the customary reports, the from Eden, and the revenue and expenditure fund report was back, and that's fixed. And I showed Stephen how to find that and how to do that, so he can pull it up and look and so there's a lot of, so I guess all of the same reports as we have had the last, minus not having the revenue and fund report for about 4 months, but now they're all back.
I know 16 years of reports and your responsibility and attention to detail, it's just probably hard to imagine that that's not going to be part of your work life.
And yes, it's hard to believe. It's made up most of my daily life for these years, and I do look forward to what's next, and I definitely think it's a time to pass the torch to the younger generation.
Congratulations. Thank you so much, Superintendent Hutchins.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pam.
Indeed, Pam, thank you. I think you're gonna love retirement.
Thank you, Superintendent Hutchins. We really appreciate everything you've done, and I particularly appreciate that you're leaving the hospital district on sound financial footing while also exploring some new and innovative ways to serve our community. I think it's quite a legacy to have left. So thank you, and we'll look forward to seeing you. Probably, it's at the grocery store, isn't it, where we run into everybody?
That's usually where it is. So, the grocery store or the post office.
That's right. We'll say hi to you when you see that.
Thank you, Pam. And I appreciate the expression of confidence.
Welcome.
Pam, this is Jack Estrada, and though we don't know each other, I've been with the hospital since before it was built, and I'm familiar with the time and effort you put into getting this building off the ground. So I just want to say thank you on behalf of Peace Health and myself.
Thank you, Jack. And I wish you the best. I know you're the new officer in charge over there now, full time. And I hope you have a good success over there and take over.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay. Wow. All right. I guess we hand off to Mr. Butler at this point.
So, ironically enough, since Jack is present, we have a letter about that I thought we could address now. We have a letter welcoming Jack Estrada and congratulating him on his appointment.
It's a little awkward, but congratulations, Jack.
Well, thank you. I'm feeling very welcomed and part of the team right off the bat. Thank you very much.
So were there any edits to the letter we had, commissioners?
Just one. It's dated September 24th, 2021. Oh, I think that's somebody's about this year passing.
March 24th?
Maybe March 24th. Would be more appropriate.
I don't know. That seems like a really unreasonable edit, Trish.
But just delighted to have you join us tonight, too, Jack. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
Otherwise, I approve of the letter. Thank you.
Indeed.
Should we pass? I think we should probably pass it by motion since it's signed by all of you. If that's all right.
Okay, I make a motion to accept the letter, even though Trisha's just going to, sorry.
I'll second that motion.
Awesome.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 You'll be receiving a letter soon, Jack. You can look forward to that.
Welcome.
Okay.
Thank you.
And Nathan, you're on to your report, son.
All right. Let's see here. So this is for February 2021. I'll go through this relatively briefly. We have, we've been posting these on our website. And you have the written report, so the public has access to this. So I don't really see the point in restating all of it, but I'm going to go through the financials and then the op statistics and then a brief ops report. So as you know, revenue is a little low January, February. Expenditure is a little bit high just because there are so many annual expenditures that fall in January and February. Our revenue and expenses are within the thresholds of what you'd expect this time of year. We had a revenue of $45,942, $205,549 in expenditures. Current cash reserves and investments, which includes our investment account of $343,000, $409,000 in reserves, and then $838,000 in cash. Collectively is about $1.6 million in cash reserves and investments. Next month, we plan to pay off the EMS building per our resolution last month. You can expect this number to go down. We anticipate higher revenues next month, which is why we're doing it then. Any questions on the financials? The payroll is a little bit high, February and March. That's because of our back pay to the EMTs, and at least in part, it's a significant part of it. But by the end of the payroll period, which ends tomorrow, that should all be resolved. And so we should be in full compliance with our collective bargaining agreement, paying people properly. You know, payroll year is quite complicated. It wasn't super easy straightening all that out, but I'm feeling like we're where we need to be on that. And employees seem happy. They know the terms on which they are paid and have greater confidence that they're paid correctly. Any questions on the financials?
No, just a comment. I just want to thank you for your hard work trying to straighten out the EMT back pay issues. I know that was really agonizing at times, and it was incredibly complicated. I know you and I talked about it a lot. I really appreciate you doing the right thing by the staff and getting it sorted out. So thank you.
I appreciate that. I feel good about it. I feel like we're where we need to be on that. We've also, I'll cover this in the ops report, but we've also now have per diem EMTs who can cover PTO time for staff. This should reduce our overtime expenses and allows them to use their PTO time as they should expect to be able to use it. If we give them that benefit, they should be able to use it. So we're getting a lot of things straightened out. Going through our statistical report, there were 61 runs for February 2021. Still a little bit low compared to historical averages. Keep in mind that COVID hit in March of last year. And so these are all sort of, you know, we compare February against the prior year. And so it's not surprising the decrease. As you know, we've seen decreases in the number of calls that we've had since COVID began, which is perhaps counterintuitive, but likely due to many things. And I think we've talked about that multiple times before. There's no point to go through it over again. Mm-hmm. So we've had 129 calls total, or runs total this year. Average number of responders in February, 2.3. All of our response times are solid, well within the guidelines set by the state. And as you can see in the report, they're broken down by zone, which is something that was started late in the Jerry Martin tenure, which gives you a lot of data about our response times and how they vary based on location. Anybody have questions about the statistical report? All right. Launching into operations. This month, I don't have a lot to talk about that is necessary, but the main things are our COVID-19 response model, shifting model continues. We continue to take the precautions regarding COVID. Our community outreach programs continue. We're, you know, doing CPR cards. There's been some opening up. We anticipate being able to hold some small classes. We are still sort of limiting access to the station. So we did teach one class, but Lainey went to another location to do it with about six people that really needed to get their CPR cards. There are certain professions where they need to have it. Community paramedicine continues to be very active. Lainey Volk, our director of outreach, is considerably overworked right now. She's really pulling a lot of hours. I'm watching that situation, but she currently has 49 enrolled in total, of whom 30 patients are actively engaged. The EMS fire integration we've discussed, same with the civil investigative demand and the COVID situation. That's mainly the formal part of my report. Are there any questions on that before I launch into a few sort of management issues I want to talk about?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Let's see. One of the things we're dealing with is whether to bring medics into the station. We've talked about this before, and we're dealing with, there's a proposal on the table we're working with the medics on. They're not quite formal union negotiations yet. We're just sort of trying to work to see if we have terms that both sides are reasonably happy with. And then at that point, they become formal union negotiations, but that actual negotiation would not last very long, since you basically have an agreement that makes sense to both sides. One of the issues that has come up is the issue of repayment from a medic school student. We had previously discussed in a resolution that we would pay a $4,500 stipend to a medic student. And we had discussed what while they're in medic school, and that would be over the 10 months that it lasts, basically August and then 10 months subsequent. $4,500 a month is not a great deal of money, and their insurance needs to be deducted from that. One of the concerns that has been raised is whether we should expect them to repay all of that money. I think there are two issues going on here.
Wait, repay it or repay it? We're investing in someone to become a paramedic for the agency. They wouldn't repay it. We're just paying them to do the training, right?
But okay.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to understand.
No, that's my fault. I misspoke. I'm realizing I'm listening to myself. So okay. The issue is, if they drop out of medic school, are they obligated to repay any of the money?
I see.
Basically, I'm inclined to agree that they can pay back $1,000 a month. And then after they finish medic school and they have this valuable degree, this valuable credential completed, that perhaps the term should be a little bit less generous. I guess I'm just curious what your thoughts are as we deal with this issue. Since this was something that we addressed in a board resolution already, I don't think you necessarily have to correct it in the board resolution, but I'm looking for a little bit of management guidance. And I should say that if any of you would prefer to discuss this in executive session, we can, and we have one coming up. So if you want to defer discussion, we can.
Can you just clarify something for me? Like, sure. I thought the concept was that we're investing in an employee for their education. So then they work for the agency, and if they complete school, they don't pay us back.
Correct. This is
right. So you're just talking if they drop out.
If they drop out, quit, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, we're investing in someone, and if they drop out and quit, I mean, I understand life happens and there could be extenuating circumstances, but it does seem like we're placing a lot of resources in someone. It's basically effectively the salary of a staff EMT, more or less. I would think that if we want to be sure that someone has the intention to finish school, since we're investing in them.
Okay. Are you guys, I mean, $1,000 a month repaying if they drop out during school makes sense to me. Is that low?
So like if you're saying if they like went to school for 3 months and we paid them for 3 months, they would owe us $3,000.
Correct.
Yeah, it's low. It's incentivizing, I suppose.
Okay.
Is this part of a contract you have to, you're changing the contract that you have, or is there already a contract written that has some of this, these details? Or are you writing it now?
We're just talking.
Oh, yep. Okay. So we haven't had any formal agreement in the past.
The challenge is that we already passed a resolution about this. And so I'm just looking for a little guidance on how you interpret that, how much flexibility you're okay with me exercising.
Yeah, I think we want to choose carefully who we send to medical school, obviously, because we want success, right? But I would agree that our staff and the people we would choose certainly have, I would count on you to be careful with that. And so if there was extenuating circumstances, they need to pay some of the money back. It seems like $1,000 a month is just fine. It's just hopeful that we have a success story for medic school. Have we ever had anybody that didn't complete? Have we had someone that didn't complete in the past?
No, not that I know of. We did have, no, the answer to that is no.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, we would hope that wouldn't happen, but we would leave it to your discretion and any to decide that. But also, yeah, if you need support and guidance, reaching out to anyone of us is possible too, or...
I see Everett's brow is furrowed. What are you thinking? The wheels are turning.
Yeah. You know, there are many sort of repercussions of this. First of all, it strikes me that it's really important that whomever is selected for this, it's important to our county that they complete this. And so if they really don't expect to complete the training, they should not be signing up for it. These positions, I think, are they don't come up all the time. So I think this is a pretty choice thing, and it's not so there's a lot of responsibility for the person who accepts this. I think it's actually great that, from my perspective, that they would get paid while they go to school. First of all, the training is free, which is not due to us, but still, mm-hmm. In some respects, it is. That they would get their salary is great. We don't get any benefit from their salary unless they complete the training. To think that they wouldn't just owe the whole salary if they didn't complete the training is hard for me to accept. So I think $1,000 a month is way too little. I think they owe it all back, personally. So when I was a med tech, I went to, took employment with the federal government, the Indian Health Service, in Alaska. And they moved me to Alaska, where I worked as a med tech up in Anchorage. And the deal there was that they would move me, my household, lock, stock, and barrel, because it was considered a foreign assignment. And it was at no expense to me. As long as I worked for 1 year, I did not owe them any money. And if I worked for 2 years, they would move me back and not owe them any money. However, if I worked for less than a year, I owed them the total amount of the move. So it was not prorated or anything like that. It was the whole amount. And so this was in 19 AD, and that was over $10,000. So that was a significant amount of money, and that was just standard. That was the way they handled it. It was a commitment on their part, and I had to commit, and I don't think that's unreasonable. That's the way I look at this. This is not a slot that comes open all the time. This is a big commitment. That person needs to be finish, and we get nothing for it. If they quit, go to another part of the country, we don't get any of their training, the benefit, anything. It's thank you very much, goodbye. And I'm not saying that they're... Stuff happens, life happens, and I would suggest that they could, if something awful happens, that they come back to us and petition us. But on the other hand, I think that it's not unreasonable to say, hey, look, this is what we expect. This is serious. If you want to get paid, this training is going to be a feather in your cap. This is a significant thing. This is something that's portable that goes with you. If you leave us and you are a medic, you still have the benefit of this. Even after your training, after your training is completed. So I don't think it's unreasonable to say, you know, we are happy to provide you funding while you're taking this, but at the same time, if for any reason that you have to quit or do decide to quit before the training is complete, you do owe the money back. And I think that we would be reasonable about how we ask the money back, maybe not in some sort of, you know, on a payment sort of basis. And as you've said, nobody has done that, and I hope that that wouldn't be the case. I hope we're talking about an imaginary thing. What happens if a meteor strikes somebody? You know, I mean, I hope it's that unlikely. And but at the same time, I think it's would be quite unreasonable to think that we wouldn't want something back. So that's my opinion.
Okay.
Is there a commitment that we're asking for employment after they become a paramedic? Is there a time period?
So,
or is it just an understanding?
There's definitely a commitment, and the idea is they would need to pay back the money if they quit after completing medic school as well.
Okay.
But there are two separate things going on. One is if they quit during medic school for whatever reason, and then the other is what if they quit their job once they're done with medic school. The thing about that is, you know, once they've completed medic school, they have this valuable credential that will be paid for, and that they can go work anywhere, right? And you can't keep people doing that. But if they do it within a certain period of time, then they should be expected to pay back part of what we spent to get them there. So, I mean, I'm inclined to be like, well, you know, if something bad happens to you while you're in medic school, I get that. You know, you get sick, break a leg, you know, I mean, these things happen, and I'm inclined.
Meteor strike.
I'm inclined to be very forgiving. Once they've finished medic school, you know, they have this valuable credential, and if they quit to go somewhere else, without any extenuating circumstances, I'm actually inclined to be more difficult than if something happens during medic school, because they kind of already had the benefit of completing that credential. But I'm curious to hear if you guys think there's a difference between how we should handle it. Someone drops out or quits during medic school versus after. And then if you think the 1,000, I mean, it would probably be tiered, right? I mean, you would, if they quit 6 months after finishing school, it's going to cost them more than if they finish 18 months after school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, exactly how we structure that is, you know, to us, it's a theoretical thing, right? But there's a real person going through this. And so I want to be as reasonable as possible, but I also want to be confident as Ever points out, that they're making a real commitment to us and to the agency if we're going to be putting money into this.
Right. And, you know, it's public money. So I think that's very important to take into consideration. This isn't like from a foundation and a scholarship. This is public funds we're using to reinvest back into our community. And I'm with you in terms of, you know, if someone had some horrible event happen while they're in school, you know, that has to be taken into consideration. But I'd love to know what other agencies do and look at, you know, some other agencies on the mainland to see what do they do? Or does Orcas Island and Lopez, do they have a similar program? Do you know?
Yes, and they've you know, other agencies do participate in these programs. One of the distinctive things about this program is that it's paid for. You know, we neither ourselves nor the employee has to pay for the training itself. In situations where that training is not paid for, it is common to require the employee to pay it back if they drop out. But this stipend is essentially wages. It is not related to the cost of the schooling itself. It's basically a wage we're paying them while they're in school, which they likely consume because they're trying to afford the cost of living in Seattle. Yes. So it's not quite the same. And so it's a little anomalous, but it's not so far out. But it is common to have this tiered thing where, like, if someone quits earlier, mm-hmm. later they pay back. Anymore. That's my understanding of it.
I think I'd just like, I mean, I would feel comfortable going with what sort of standard in the industry, you know, what are other agencies doing and do something similar.
That's what this is.
Yeah.
So $1,000 is standard.
There's not a standard number, but this is basically how it's structured. You agree on, you know, a certain amount that they'd have to pay back depending on when the event happens. It's also common to allow exemptions for illness or meteor strike, lightning hits, whatever, that where you can get out of the debt entirely. So what I would say is this, if any of you want to talk about this further, give me a call, we can talk. But basically what I'm hearing is you really do think that we need to have a clear expectation of this person going to medic school. We can be at least a little bit flexible, particularly in the event that there's some major crisis beyond their control. Is that broadly accurate?
It is for me, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and how much postgraduate do we expect them to work in the agency? What is the requirement?
We proposed a 3-year commitment from the time they finished medic school.
Okay.
By the time you get to the third year, you would not be paying back a great deal. So, with your permission, I'll go ahead and go back to the union and continue to talk about this in our non-negotiations as we prepare for formal negotiations. And hopefully we work something out.
That sounds good. I appreciate you looping us in on this. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we're investing in the agency this way. I think it's exciting.
Okay. That's the main management issue I wanted to talk about. We've talked about a lot of management issues the last few board meetings, and I'm still trying to get all those things done. So I don't have anything else.
Well, if that's it and there are no further questions or comments, we would now open up to audience participation. I think it looks like we've fairly dwindled down to four people. And I don't know if Nathan's received any emails or comments from anyone.
No emails or comments.
Okay.
You know, they know mostly it's employees on now. They know where my door is and my house, so.
And they know Trish and I are available to them as well. Okay, so in that case, I think we will adjourn. If we have time, do we have time for a quick executive session under RCW 42.30.110? At 1G.
I probably need
20 always minutes. A little bit of time for an executive session.
I know. We got to extend Pam's last meeting just a little bit more. So I think we can do this. Steve, welcome to the team, and thank you for joining us tonight.
Steve, since you're here, would you mind staying in the feed for about 20 minutes until we get back? So if anybody joins, you can tell them where we're at. Is he here or he just quit?
I think he just signed out.
I think he just signed out.
Oh. Do you want me to get him back?
No, it's all right.
Okay. So because you and I need to come back, Nathan, and just sign off, right?
Close the meeting at the end.
Yeah. Okay.
Did I see an executive board meeting invitation?
No, I'll send it right now.
No,
you're sending it now. Okay.
Yeah. So
maybe we'll take a 5-minute break and then meet again.
5-minute break. So we'll meet back at 7:25. An executive session for
20 minutes.
20 minutes. I like it. Is that good? So we'll be back to adjourn the meeting at 7:45.
Sounds good.
Going okay. For a record.
We are. Pam, sorry, we're making it longer. Okay, I'll see you all in 5 minutes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.